Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our guest, Marion Jacobs, will be back with us today to talk more on the damaging effects of the U.S. prison system on the incarcerated men and women who are mainly being kept in solitary confinement, on restrictive housing blocks, just all kinds of things that are going on behind those prison walls. Unfortunately, the media is not the best friend of anyone that's incarcerated. They don't report enough of the things that go on behind those prison walls. If someone dies, they don't even report that. So it's pretty sad when we have a country where we have the media who does absolutely nothing. To get the word out about these injustices that are occurring inside the prison system. So we have people like Marion Jacobs and others that are trying to bring awareness to people in society that there is damaging effects for those who are incarcerated. Once they commit a crime, they are punished, they are penalized, especially in America where we have such injustice and harsh sentencing. These people that are incarcerated are serving life and life without parole sentences, and even 40, 50 years. Some of them are even getting free life sentences where people don't even live one life. We need to get people more involved, especially the American Psychological Association, even the American Medical Association. They need to be more involved because they know that there is an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses, of addiction. There is so much going on. So we are going to be introducing Marion Jacobs, who will be talking more. And she is a psychosocial therapist who has worked with prisoners in the United States as well as in the Netherlands. She has recently written a book. She is an expert in all that she talks about. Her knowledge of what's going on in these penal systems is enormous because she does so much research in addition to the volunteer work she does in the prisons in the Netherlands, and to her extensive research, interaction with those who have been incarcerated, and so many other things. So let's welcome this morning, this afternoon, and this evening, as it is in her state or country, it is now evening. In our country, it is now afternoon. So Marion Jacobs, are you on with us?
Hello, Marion. Yes, I am on with you. Can you hear me?
I want to welcome you once again, as always, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about these things that are going on in the penal system. I want to congratulate you on the book that you are finishing up on, and I'm looking forward to reading that as well because I know you put a lot into that book. And so we are looking forward to reading it. We are looking forward to hearing more about it. And right now we're looking forward to hearing from you. So welcome again, and I welcome Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands.
Thank you. The sound is not always very good, but I can hear you.
I know it's, you know, we always have some sort of interference when we're on this radio show. We get robocalls, these people that they don't have anything better to do but make robocalls to people in society. But anyway, I can hear you. I'm sure the audience can hear you really good, Marion, and I hope you can hear us.
Yes, I can. Thank you.
So do you want to talk a little bit, first of all, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about your book and let the audience know, something about, when it will be out, when to look for it or whatever.
Oh, yes, I have finished my book. It's called Lost in the System. And in my book, I, in a way, analyze or deconstruct the system itself. So I dive into how the system works, where it's built on, and how it is rooted in society. Because a system, not only a prison system, but systems are always reflections of society. So by looking at a system like the prison system, we can also learn about ourselves. I have deconstructed that, and I've also been analyzing how politics works, how it's entangled with economy. I have looked at the history of the United States. I've been looking at the racial issue, the population that lives in prison, and what we have to do to make it real change. I finished the book this week. I've been writing for 8 hours last Wednesday, and now there's somebody is going to look at my content, might give some feedback, and if that's finished, there will be an artist involved who is making beautiful art. So people who read my book will read it on a rational way with their mind, the words that I wrote, but they also will read it with their hearts, and that's because the art is going to be added. So you will feel the content and you will read it, read the content with your brains, with your thinking. I also have a translator who is going to, because I write in Dutch, but she's going to translate it in accessible English. So it's not going to be a book for academics or whatever, but it's going to be a book that can be read by anyone. For me, that's very important because I wrote this book especially for incarcerated people themselves, but also their loved ones who want to know more about and understand more about where their loved one is incarcerated, what is happening with the person that he or she loves. And of course, I also will send copies of my book to key figures who are connected to the system, and hope that I can bring some more awareness of what is really going on behind the surface. I have not a date when it's going to be published because it has to be translated and the translation will take time, but I hope to be at the end of summer or in autumn that it will be published and available.
I know you put a lot of work into it because you have been one busy lady. It's very obvious in the research you've done and all the work that you've done. And I'll tell you, you have kind of brought some comfort to a lot of people who have loved ones inside, because you brought some kind of meaning to what you do as a psychosocial therapist. You brought some kind of meaning to allow these families to know that we are focusing on, at least you have been, and now you have many of us focusing on, not the offender and not the crime itself, but the cause, what's behind. And there's so many families that know what's behind the cause of their loved ones. The only thing is sometimes when we get into the court system, we have prosecutors. They look at the prosecutorial misconduct. They look at the mail tampering. They look at the evidence being tampered with. The court system, there's so many biased judges. The media itself is biased. You have so many people involved in the whole trial of the incarcerated individual, so that by the time the end comes, some of these people are made to look 10 times worse than they really are. Crime is crime, and people have to, you know, they have to be penalized for what they do wrong. But at the same time, let it be fair. You know, let the truth come out, and once they're incarcerated, let them serve their time without targeting them, without using the vengeance and the retaliation, the hatred, the racism, and all these other things that come into play with these things. So I really enjoyed listening to you because you have so much knowledge about a lot of these things that a lot of families want to know about. It helps them to understand more about what's going on with their loved ones and also what's going on in the system.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you want to have prison reform, if you want to break down that wall, now, the first step you have to take is that you look at the wall, and first look at how it has been built up, because then you know which tools you need to break it down. And that's what I did. I have been looking at the wall. I have been looking at how is it built and what do we need to break it down again. And because a lot is very wrong in the system and also around the system, and people have to become aware of that. it can be changed. And I think the choice is with the people. And people have to become aware of that the way things are working now, the way the things are arranged now, is that they have to see that the whole person is there only in the benefit for corporations. And it's even going further. It's not only the system, but it's also in the country. I think what you see with the ongoing culture war, the country is in fact based on divide and conquer. And for as long people are divided, the corporations win, because people who are divided cannot be one strong voice against the corporations. And this is what the corporations want. And people have to become aware of that they are used. Also the people in the streets, they are used, they are manipulated without being aware of that. And the system, the prison system, is a very clear mirror of what is happening in society, because the system should not be there. You know, if we want to rehabilitate incarcerated people, we first have to rehabilitate the system. But if you want to rehabilitate the system, we first have to rehabilitate society. And it starts with the people themselves. They have to make the choice to become really free in that country of freedom. And that's the fact to me.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed that a lot of times, even social status plays a big role in how people are treated in prison and the sentences that they get. And I know that people that have some kind of power or some kind of money, fame, or whatever it might be, they stick together. If it happened that someone commits crime against someone who comes from an elite family or a family that's well connected, I notice that the treatment is totally different. That's where they have problems getting help, because these people will make it possible for a lot of these incarcerated individuals who have committed an offense with someone that has some kind of power. And what we have in the prisons now, the prisons are overloaded with individuals who have nothing. Individuals who grew up, some in the cities, in the ghettos, some who grew up without fathers, without mothers, some who grew up in drug-infested homes, some who grew up with no siblings, some who grew up just struggling, trying to make it, and being violated by strangers, family. And we see a lot of people in prison who have been violated by family members, in-laws, by strangers, and these people held it in for so many years, and finally when they did let it out, it turned into something much more serious, because they let it out during a time when they just couldn't cope anymore. So we have so many different people in prison, and unfortunately we have so many people that are connected, somehow well connected, which prevents them from getting treatment, from being involved in programs, from being kept in solitary or on restrictive blocks. So many of them are unable to adjust. And this is a sad thing in prisons, because these people committed an offense, whether it be nonviolent or violent, whether it be a fatal, you know, fatality or whatever, they should not be having to deal with all the injustice that goes on in the prisons.
No, this is you know, the system now, it's built on breaking down people instead of rehabilitating people. There is no rehabilitation, and even when there are rehabilitation programs, they don't work, they cannot work if somebody is only busy with trying to survive the system. You know, if you want to rehabilitate, then you only can do that in a safe environment, in a humane environment. Then you can go through the process of deeper justice, which means that you become the original person that you really are. And the whole system is built on breaking people and maintaining people for as long as possible in the prison system. I mean, it's insane, for instance, that from all the people who are arrested, only a few get it to court with all these plea bargains. That only, you know, so sentences are negotiated instead of that you go to court and that you have a trial. Almost nobody can go to trial. It's all negotiated. So if you really think of it, it's insane, of course, because it's not about, it shouldn't be about negotiation or money. It should be about, you know, giving, how do you say that, judging the human being and the crime. And if you not, on, you know, what you see now is that only the crime gets judged, which means that somebody who shows good behavior in prison, many times they don't look at it, you know, in an appeal. They go in appeal after 20 years, they have done their programs, they have done their best, but then the judge said, yeah, well, but you did commit this horrendous crime, so you have to stay in for another 20 years. But you can't change the crime itself anymore. You only can change yourself.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's true. The just, you know, what you were just mentioning in the crime itself, but also in, I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. But there's a lot of people who, you know, who are on side, and you know, whatever the crime may be. I'm going to let you finish because I just lost my train of thought completely. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, what is so devastating in the justice system is that they don't look at what you also say, at the causes behind the crime. Somebody who commits a crime, I call it a web of influence. There are all kinds of influences in his life. It's his upbringing, it's his culture, it might be trauma. There are so many things that enters a life path of somebody. And, you know, people who have no psychiatric disorders when they get born, they don't get born and think, oh, I'm going to commit a crime. You know, so a lot happens that led to that crime, and it's crucial for healing for an incarcerated individual to become aware of how was my life, how was my upbringing, what did I miss, what did I not develop, why could I commit this crime, why didn't I feel responsible. He has to get insight in himself and all these causes behind that crime. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you only keep looking at the crime itself. But the crime itself is only one piece of our whole life.
And you know, you mentioned, that's what I started to say, and I lost my train, but you had mentioned negotiating. This is something I have found throughout the years with a lot of individuals incarcerated, is that a lot of them claim their innocence, and yet the only way they could get a reduced sentence, even though they're innocent, they're getting sentenced. The only way they can get a reduced sentence is if they, a plea deal, you know, or a negotiation where they admit something that they are totally innocent of. I've seen that happen so many times where people have gone to prison, and even though they may have only gotten 20 years, in contrast to staying a life sentences or 15 years instead of 25, and just to have their sentence reduced, just so they don't get an enormous years in prison, they will admit to something they didn't do. That's really sad.
Yeah, yeah, that's why. But you know, it's embarrassing that you cannot negotiate about a crime. And that's what is happening. You can't. But it is happening, and that's insane. In fact, and you know, you can see with that it's all about money. Only the United States and the Philippines have this bail system. Not any other country in the whole world has a bail system. Only the United States and the Philippines. Now, that says something.
You know, the United States is inconsistent because even when you talk about voting rights, I understand that I believe it's Maine and Vermont. There's two states that have not taken away prisoners' voting rights because they are citizens of the United States. But yet every other state, United States, has taken away that privilege. For what reason? I don't know. And I myself think it was a selfish reason because my theory on it is that they are not trying, they're not even considering, because the prisons are making so much money, prisons for profit, that they want to keep it. And I found out that there's a lot of people out here who have invested in the prison. And these, I'm sure, I know celebrities for certain. I know celebrities. I don't know about the politicians, but I know celebrities have investments in the prisons for profit. They have investments in the prisons. So if there's politicians out there that have investments, they don't want to see the prisoners released. And this would be one main reason why they would feel the way they do. Take away the prisoners' voting rights, because prisoners and their loved ones, 2.3 or more million people, would be voting for politicians who are for the cause for the criminal justice reform, for the cause of humanity. And these people are against it. My own theory.
Yes, and I think, can you say something, Leona, because I don't know if you can hear me or any, can you say something?
Yes.
Wait a minute, something. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think another thing might be, you know, if you take voting rights away, then then it's like in the time of the slavery. It makes me think of the history of slavery. And I think if you take voting rights away, that form of dehumanization, then you can say officially that somebody is not a citizen anymore, and because he's not part of the democracy anymore. And that makes it easier to further dehumanize people and do what you want to do with them. You can break them down in the prison by all the, you know, when people are beaten up, have no access to health care, bad food. You know, it can all happen, and a part of that is because they are officially no citizens anymore. And the purpose is, in fact, to break down these people, because that keeps prisons full. And what you say about celebrities who invest in prisons, you know, it's like bio-industry. It's like this is so insane, because people in prisons are, in fact, no prisoners, but they are commodity. So that's what it feels to me, commodity to make money. And rehabilitation is so far away. But it says something, and that's what I hope that people become aware of. It says something about society, because who wants to be a society that treats its own people that way? You know, it's embarrassing. It's more than embarrassing. It's barbaric. And for me, the United States is not a democracy anymore, because if you take away voting rights from 2.2 or 2.3 million people, then you are not a democracy. In a democracy, everybody votes. Everybody who lives there votes. Otherwise, you're not a democracy.
It doesn't even make sense that they would take the rights of the incarcerated away, their voting rights. I mean, I can see making them pay, going to prison, you know, serving their time, but to take away their voting rights, which has nothing whatsoever to do with the crime they've committed, it has to do with where they were born. Every other country, if you're a citizen of the Netherlands or Germany or Norway, or if you're a citizen of Russia or China or Greece or whatever, they don't take your rights away because you committed a crime. The mentality of our lawmakers, the mentality of our leadership in this country is unbelievable. It's almost like children. It's almost like people that have never had any kind of experience, and they're in politics.
Yeah, but I think that politics is only useful. Politics is only focused on the wealthy ones and the corporations, because, you know, the lobbyists, they stem from the corporations and they have such a big influence on politics and lawmaking. Lawmaking, the laws are not made for the common people. The laws are made for the wealthy ones and in the benefit for the corporations. And the corporations, they pay for it by these huge contributions, financial contributions to elections, all kinds of elections. And that's the whole thing. You know, you can't have a prison system like this for the benefit of the community, because we all know that this system does not work. I mean, it's proven that it's not work, that it doesn't work. Recidivism numbers are very high. We know that breaking down people, torturing people can never be good, not for society, not for a prisoner, but also not for a victim. It's only good for the people who want these prisons have filled. So the problem what you see with prison reform is that the prison reform groups, they have an agenda to reform the prison. But what you see is a lot of resistance in the system and behind that system against prison reform. Because why don't they allow politicians to go into the prisons to, you know, to have some control? Because they don't want to have a change. The prison system and the politicians, they have another agenda that does not match prison reform. And I think the people have to become aware of that, so that, you know, I think there are enough people who do want prison reform, and they can make, they can be one and become a very strong voice against the politicians. I think people should, you know, protest and go on the street, and not only for the prison system, but also for themselves. They have to see also for themselves that the law that politicians make is not for the people in the streets. In fact, the people in the streets are in a way also incarcerated. They are all a kind of commodity, you know, and really, I always say the corporations are the new gods. They are obeyed. But when people stop obeying corporations, then the corporations have no power anymore. But for as long as we talk and we scream and we don't do anything, and we stay divided, like with racism and all kinds of other things, that we fight each other, then the corporation wins. And that's the whole thing where people have to become aware of.
You know, there was recently, I think it was 2 days ago, there was a group that was picked up on the side of the highway in Massachusetts, and they were carrying firearms and their uniform and everything. Apparently they're anti-government, but they say they're not violent people. And so they all went to court. And in court, I guess they didn't want the court-appointed lawyer. They wanted their leader to represent them. And they knew the law. They were quoting the law right in the courtroom. But they were told by the judge that their leader cannot represent them because that he had no law degree. But I have seen on television and other times I've heard of people representing themselves. And if they're representing themselves and they're not lawyers, they're allowed to do so. But it was just like one of the suspects or individuals mentioned that they quoted their amendment right to freedom of speech, their amendment right to I don't know all the amendments, but they were quoting their amendment. And I don't think the people, when it comes to their own, when they're representing themselves or they're representing their group or whatever, I don't see where they would have to have a law license if this is what they prefer to do. And the people need to be the government, because that's what the government is. The government is the people. And we're not acting as the people.
No, exactly.
And that's the sad thing, because as you mentioned, a lot of the elite, a lot of the wealthy are going to be taken over. And I see it happening right in this country now. I see it happening. Look, the Democrats have tried everything to make things right, and the Republicans are against everything that they're doing. They've been trying to bring out the fact that what happened at the White House, the Capitol, these things don't happen. I mean, you have your own people destroying your own government, your own capital, your own
democracy.
This is crazy. We're living in a country that's going to be destroyed by their own people in this country.
Yeah, because I think, you know, for as long as politics is influenced so highly by corporations, by money, they are not for the people. And I think what the people should demand is a reform of politics. Because there should be a government that can be trusted. Now there is a government that cannot be trusted, whether it's left or right. You know, that should be reformed. Corporations should take their own responsibility for what they do, for all the side effects of the things they do. Now they are not responsible because they fall under the 14th Amendment. They have the same rights as an individual, and an individual cannot be held accountable for damage that he does purposely. But so that's what I saw and what I read. Like, when I give an example, if you have this corporation Shell, this oil company, Shell has polluted the environment in the Niger Delta. They are not responsible for that because it was not on purpose. The only purpose was to pump up oil. So because they fall under the 14th Amendment, they cannot be held accountable. And so, and there are also like clothing factories who have to, clothing companies, labels, who let their clothes be manufactured in poor countries with child labor. They cannot be held accountable because they fall under the 14th Amendment. So corporations, what you see is they are very strong. They only have one official legal responsibility. It's legal that they have to make as much money as possible in as short time as possible for their own stockholders. That's legally their own purpose. They have no responsibility for the environment, for the community, nada, nothing, because they fall under the 13th Amendment. So what you see with the prison system is that all these corporations, all these privatized, like the privatized healthcare, the food industry, and go on, they all are around the prison system. They have very long contracts from 15 years, 20 years with the prison industry. So they are assured that they get their money and they can make it as cheap as possible within the prison. So it doesn't matter whether they serve good food, healthy food, or rotten food, or whatever what kind of food. It doesn't matter because they have these contracts. And they don't have responsibility for the prisoners because they fall under the 14th Amendment. They are not responsible. Now, these corps, and this is the same with the healthcare. Healthcare is highly privatized. So it's what you see in the prisons. That's what we all know. Prisoners have almost no access to healthcare. So, and it doesn't matter because also these healthcare companies, they also have these long contracts, so they are secured of their income. And when they provide as less service as possible, they can keep the money in the pocket. And then you have the taxpayer. He pays a lot of money for all these incarcerated people. They believe in this fairy tale that community would be safe when you lock up everybody, which does not work. Because it's impossible to have a safe community. That's a fairy tale. You know, everywhere in the world something can happen. That's also in our community. But they do believe in lock up the bad people, that we have a great community. We want to pay all that tax money. And for what? And it's all serving the corporations.
Yeah.
But that's the game that people really, really have to become aware of, because it does not serve the community. The politicians do not serve the community.
They don't. And you know,
I hear a lot of noise from all kinds of people.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to mute her. If we have a caller, I was going to have her speak. Too much noise in the background. Somebody is calling in though. But real quickly, hopefully she'll quiet down and then I can bring her back in. But one of the things is what you're saying, and I have been really preoccupied with other things going on, and it's very difficult for me to concentrate today. But there's just so much going on in the penal system. Really, it's getting out to a point now where we have government leaders, and I'm sorry, but we have leadership in this country that's not really leading. And you can be one of two things: you can be a follower, or you can be a leader. And we are in a country that's so focused on wanting to be leaders, but they're so insecure that they're followers. And this is what we're having. I myself, like I say, I don't care what anybody thinks. In this country, we have to try to decipher between honest lawyers and crooked lawyers, honest politicians and crooked politicians, honest prison officials and CEOs against the crooked ones. It's a shame when you have to try to figure out who you can trust in this country. And there is so much corruption in the United States of America. So much corruption. Now, I'm going to try to bring, I believe it may be Christy, I'm not sure, 405.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
So
nice to hear you.
I just got to where I saw this was on right now, so
I wanted to have you talk about, you sent me something in the email and I was not able to open it. And so I wanted to ask you to talk about, you mentioned something about your son, something's going on with him right now, a crisis situation.
Yes.
Can you talk about it so we can find out what's going on?
Yeah. Yes. I knew that he was struggling with stuff. I thought it was just a serious depression, you know, which is enough. But it's last night I got a call, and not too long into the call, he's like, Mom, I am getting panic attacks so bad. He said, it's hard for me to even leave my cell. He said, I'm shaking so bad. He's shaking from the inside out, you know. And the reaction, I mean, his heart's beating real fast, like his blood pressure. And he can't breathe and stuff. It's, and it's, I don't know what to do for him. I mean, that's why you hear all the background noise, is because I'm up at the psychiatrist that he used to have. I'm up here, you know, I'm going to play it for him and let him see what I should tell him to take. I don't know.
Is your psychiatrist available to say a few words, though? Or is he tied up right now?
Well, I'm waiting for him to get a free moment, so.
Okay, this is one of the examples, Miriam. This is another example. We have people incarcerated who are seeing a lot. They're seeing a lot of things going on in the prisons that they can't even talk about because it's so taboo. You know, people get beaten in prisons, they get raped in prisons, they, you know, so many things. And a lot of times, families don't want to talk about it, or their loved ones don't want to talk about it. Instead, they go through all kinds of situations where there's crisis situations, where they, like right now, this is a mother who's having a panic attack because her son is in crisis. And these are some of the things that go on in the prison. And I'd like to have you talk a little bit about these things, Mariam. People do not realize, especially those who have no loved ones inside, they don't realize what is going on with not only the family, the incarcerated, but their families as well. And we also have another caller. So I'm going to ask the other caller, can you please state your name?
Yeah, my name is Chris.
Okay, Chris, do you have a question, a comment, feedback?
I have some experience with this situation you're talking about, you know, people that have been affected by the system.
Okay, and are you employed with the DOC or are you a counselor?
I do counseling, yeah. I do my own, you know, street counseling, if you will.
Okay, now, you heard Christy talking about her son's situation.
I didn't hear that part. I just now basically just cut off.
Okay. Christy, you want to talk about it again? And he can, what is your name, Chris?
Chris, yeah, Chris.
Thank you for coming on.
Okay. So after this COVID thing, I don't know if it has anything to do with it or not. I just know that they were locked down for about a year, you know, the main majority of the year. And he has social anxiety and panic attacks before he went in, right? And that's kind of why he twisted off this last time, because, you know, he was thinking about old thoughts, old memories, and was panicking. He had to get rid of that feeling, so he just left and went back to using drugs. So he cannot leave his cell right now. It just came out of the blue real bad, and he is having his heart beat real fast. He's shaking so bad. He said bad. And he can't breathe. And he's gotten on there. He said he was about to make a pod announcement to the whole unit there, which they call pods, that, you know, if anybody messed, I was fixing to say a bad word. If anybody messed with his mental health, they were going to get it. So do not, you know what I mean? He knows that he has to just radiate nervousness and weirdness, you know, because he's feeling so weird inside. And so he just wanted to make it clear. He's already checked a couple of people, so we don't want that happening. I feel so bad for him. He's really struggling.
Christy, there's some more to the story, but unfortunately, some things can't be mentioned, you know, in the open right now. Trying to protect something. So, but she's been going an awful lot, and she's seeking help for her son as well as herself right now.
Yeah, she sounds like, I don't know, where are you located again? What state are you in?
I'm not gonna say.
Okay, so
I'm,
I know,
sorry.
That, for some people, you know, you have to go through like in California, we go through Sacramento. Sacramento's is the one in charge of all that, and so all the complaints and all the you know, you're gonna file a complaint, you know, like if you're gonna file a citizen's complaint, right, you have to file it under California Penal Code 132.50, I think is the penal code for that, and the operational procedures that are going on in the institution, you know. There's that. You have to do your legal work first before you go into that, I think, and for protection, you know, the rights that inmates have. I think a lot of people have to go through that that process. And it takes time to go through the process. But you have to know how to write your 602s, I think they call them.
Well, he said the other night it was so bad that he was about to push the button and check out. So, you know that he would get put in, he would probably get thrown into, you know, on the floor in a room. I don't know what would happen, but that's not a good idea to do because it's not going to help anything.
I'd like to say just
worse.
One quick thing. When this threat of suicide, and I know this for a fact, when an individual is contemplating suicide and it gets out, they put them in a ward, you know, where they're
suicide watch.
And as far as I know, they don't, like, they have no clothes, they tie their restraint and everything else. And I think that's why a lot of individuals don't want to talk about their thoughts of suicide. And that's when it happens. And we have a high rate of suicides in this country. And I'm sure all of you know that. So that's another issue. What happens, I'm going to ask you, Mariam, and also Chris, what happens in a case like that when they are contemplating suicide? Loved ones don't know what to do because they don't want their
well, he's not suicidal.
No, but what happens in a situation like that when it come out? And they're put in a position like that.
Maybe Chris can answer this because in the Netherlands, the situation is fully, totally different. I cannot compare it.
A lot of times it is going to be different situations that people are in, and their circumstances are dictating who they are rather than showing them themselves. And so people on the inside need help on the inside. And, you know, the words that we use, the English language that we use can help on the outside, but on the inside, it's a little bit different and people need some of that kind of help. And I think that just a little bit of love goes a long ways and can change the course of any situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I hear is a kind of, if I understand it right, it's a situation of emergency effect. And the answer is going through all kinds of bureaucracy while the situation is very urgent, as I understand. So that makes no sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. There is no time to go through procedures of weeks when there is an emergency. So maybe I'm wrong.
You know, it's like Lawrence Drink on Sunday afternoons at 3:30 when he has his show. He talks about and brings on other prisoners or former prisoners who were inside, and they were talking about all the things that they've seen inside while they were there. I mean, stabbings and blood all over the place and rapes and beatings and tortures and, you know, things that people don't even want to think that happens in prison, but they see it firsthand.
I was in that situation. I mean, I have 17 years in behind the wall, you know. I'm a three-time loser. I didn't do one term. I didn't do two. Three times. And being exposed to all the violence and whatnot and all that's definitely a trauma. That's a trauma that I carry around. But I've been able to deal with my trauma, you know, and reverse it. I was able to reverse that trauma so that it doesn't work against me when I'm speaking or when I'm doing what I'm doing. And it takes work. It takes a lot of effort on people's part. And if people are not going to participate in their own rehabilitation, then you might find these people to be a little bit difficult. And you think that they would be able to practice in the sacred place the things that they should be doing, but they don't. They profane this area where rehabilitation is possible.
But one of the things I see happening, too, there's a lot of prisoners, too, that want to do those things. things that they're being deprived and denied by the prison officials themselves. There have been prisoners who have wanted to do some, take educational courses, mm-hmm. higher education, and work programs, and they've been denied. So it's almost like a catch-22. You, like you just mentioned, there's some that don't want to do it, and the ones that do want to do it get denied.
Well, that's true, and you can take that, you can take that responsibility if you're in there. You can take it. You can choose to do it. It's just that they don't offer so many different things that they used to back in the day. They had a lot of programs they offered, and it was about rehabilitation, and then that didn't seem to work. So there was just this.
Well, no, you can't choose.
This is a beast. We're talking about the Department of Corrections. It's a huge thing that just gets bigger and bigger. I mean, it's what it is, and it's an industry. If you ask me, I think that people
yeah.
are incarcerated. I think that there could be a lot better ways of dealing with people that have a sickness. They don't have something that they need. And it's an element that everybody needs, and it's love. And I think a lot of kids were bankrupt of that
exactly.
love from one parent, and sometimes both parents in some cases. And parents don't take responsibility for transferring responsibility to their children because they have dysfunctional households, and that's where
yeah.
one child thinks that they have the power when they don't. And there's a power struggle in the household, which makes it dysfunctional. And then a child will eventually leave the home, taking the responsibility from their parents that their parents couldn't transfer to them because of this power struggle. And kids go out in the world and try to do things because they think they can do it at a certain age. They just want to go out and do that. And then they find out that they weren't ready for it. So they come back with their tail between their legs. Now the parent has to deal with not only the fact that the child did this, and all these things just start multiplying. And do we ever get around to sorting all this out so that we can be correct and not be so inaccurate when we're dealing with something that needs to be magnified so people can walk in a new way of living?
You know, it's like a cycle. In doing social work, doing genograms, you find that a lot of times when you see dysfunction in a home, abusive parents or alcoholics or whatever, if you go back into their genie, if you do go back into time, you're going to find out a lot of them came from the same environment, and their parents came from it, and their grandparents, and somewhere along the line, the cycle has to break. You know, it's like some people grow up in a home where there's a lot of smoking cigarettes and weed and all that. And they grow up, they don't want to do it. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to smell it. They don't want nothing to do with it. Whereas others will grow up to want to, they'll be so used to smelling it and everything that they'll continue to do it. Abuse, the same thing. Sexual assaults, all these things. If you go back into, just say for medical reasons, for psychological reasons, whatever, if you go back and we research our own past, to see, how our own backgrounds came, how they were. One of the things I say in this country, too, is we don't get to interact with other people to learn about their cultures, to learn about them. And like you just said, love goes a long way. And if people would just try to get to know someone that they're interacting with, that they're talking to, whether they see them in person or talk to them on the phone or in Facebook, but just to try to interact, to try to share information as far as, your feelings. And Christy comes on and she's talking about her feelings. She's talking about her son's feelings. You know, she's been open and honest about everything that's been going on in her life. And it is. She mentioned that she and her husband were involved with substances and her two sons ended up in it. And one of them she lost last year. She's going through a lot of changes over this. And she admits that it came from her background. And so these are things that, that she's breaking a cycle. Most likely the son might end up breaking a cycle too. But this is where it is. We have to know about one another. We have to show that love and that compassion. We have to really, even forgiveness. There's so much that you just mentioned that is so real. And this is what we have to focus on.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And taking responsibility for our feelings is a really a starting point, because a lot of times all of us rely on our feelings entirely too much. And we don't want to mention it, though. We don't want to mention it, and nor do we need to, because we can look at our feelings in light of the truth, which is underneath our feelings. That's where we are, what we think, what we say, and what we do. But since you get to grow and learn in the knowledge of who you are in love, then it's not about you, it's about love.
Exactly.
So if you make it about you, then love is going to help you to be strong, not weak. If you identify yourself with the universe, then all things are possible. But if you identify with this particular group over here, or this group over here, or this church over here, or this person over here,
okay,
then you're just limited to that.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to check. I'm going to have to leave here if I want battery enough for him to hear this phone call. So I'm going to listen to it later. Okay, guys? Goodbye.
Stay strong, Chris.
But I think that's what you see now, that people are identifying with one group, and that groups, you know, that's this divide and conquer what you see. And for as long people fight each other, there is not a oneness, and then these corporations, they win, and people should see that. That they all, you know, what you see with the racial issue, whether you are black and you are part of the Black Lives Matter, or you are with another group and you are for the whites, in fact, everybody is a victim of that divide and conquer, because they all serve the corporation, the money.
Yeah.
And I think, I in my book I also write about the Native Americans. They were part of the whole of balance in the world, and everything is balancing. You know, if we look at solar system, everything is diversity, and it's a balance of diversity. That's nature. And we are part of nature. And what you now see is that we all try to look. To look like the other person, and then maybe a little bit better. We are comparing ourselves to other people. We want to be the same. We have to influence us. We want to follow them. We have lost connection to diversity, and we have lost this position in the whole. We think we can control the whole, but we are only a part of that, and that's where it went wrong, I think.
It's true. It's true. I think a lot of people have just went the wrong direction because of different things that have come up in their lives. And your thought process, you know, we have a thought process, and there is something that changes our thought process, and it's the truth. The truth will change what you think and change the way you speak. If you listen to the wrong thing, what happens is it gets a foothold in your thought process. And then it doesn't stop there. It shows up when you're speaking. And it doesn't stop there. It shows up in what you do. So you can't, if you listen to the right thing will go inside of you, goes in through your ear gate, and it goes inside of you, and it cleans you up of all the other stuff, so that when your lips are moving, you're speaking the truth in love. It makes a difference in the world. So we need to be careful what we listen to and how we listen. This is important.
I like what you said earlier, and you and Miriam remind me of one another when you say this. You were talking about focusing on nature, focusing on things like that, and Miriam speaks a lot about rivers and lakes and all these beautiful things. And I just hearing you say that made me realize that, you know, when I think about the trees and I think about nature and all the the birds and all the beautiful things out there, it puts me in a different mood than it does when we're actually so entangled in all this hatred and all this incarceration and all the abuses and deprivations and all of these things. There's such a difference in the you know, the mentality.
Yeah, because, you know, I think it started to go wrong when we thought we could possess. And I think possession is an illusion. When I was this spring, I was in my garden and I was there with the bees were flying around and the birds. And I looked at the bees and they were sitting on my arm. And I thought these bees and I, we share the same world. We are equal. We have each of us have our own purpose. But we are together in this world. And that's
right.
What we have. And I think, you know, that's what we should connect with again, because that's who we are. If I see a tree, then I feel equal to the tree. The tree is not a form, but it's with me in the world. And when I think about incarceration, all these people are with us in the world. They are put away behind these bars, these illusional walls, because in fact they are an illusion. They are people and we are people. And all of us, we have a good part and a not so good part, but we, you know, it's also what I see in yin yang. I always say we have a good part and we have a part that has to be developed, that we have to learn from. We have to learn from mistakes. I say to my children, if you don't fall down, you cannot learn to get up again. But what I see in the community, there is so much judgment. You have to be good. You have to act good. There is a militarized police who is controlling, who is bad. But what is good and what is bad? Those are empty terms, and we only can fill them with our values. But values are always personal, because if you look at the word good and you ask 10 people, what does the word good mean? Then you get 10 different answers, because they are personal. So there is not one truth about these words. And there is a lot of manipulation, I think, when it comes to language. Also, when I look at the correctional institutions, I have looked at the word correctional. I looked it up in the dictionary, and it means both punishment and rehabilitation. And the manipulation, what I see is that to the outside world, the word correctional institution can be sold as a picture of rehabilitation, while behind the wall, it's only punishment under the same term, correction. And there are more of these terms which are very crucial, and they are manipulated, which made it able to have this evil system. It's one of the elements, I think.
You know, I'd like to just go back real quickly for 1 minute in talking about prisons for profit. To me, with proper rehabilitation, as Chris was saying, with the proper rehabilitation and programs in place for these incarcerated individuals, even if they were to leave, even if they were to get sentenced like they do in your country, Mariam, in the Netherlands, Germany, Norway being the role model for all countries, even if they end up giving them the maximum sentencing of 25 years or whatever, they're still going to be bringing people in. Crime is on the rise again since the pandemic, since all of this, even in Florida with the things going on there. Crime is on the rise again. So even if they were to bring these people in, treat them, rehabilitate them, reform or whatever, and then release them. If they don't feel they should be released to the community right away, release them to a transitional program. So they leave the prison, they go to a transitional program for 2 or 3 years to prepare them for the community or to work with them. Bring in occupational therapists, bring in all these people, vocational training and all of these things while they're in this transitional facility, get them ready and help them with their resumes, help them with their, you know, contacting these employers to try to get them so that when they leave that transitional facility, they go right into either a college or go right into employment or whatever. These kind of things might just work. But I don't think the prisons are ever going to lack for people, for prisoners, because there's always prisoners going in. But the way they're doing it now, they're packing them in like sardines and still bringing them in. Pretty soon there's going to be more inside than there's going to be on the outside. So they talk about the United States getting hit. Who's going to fight for the United States when this happens? It's crazy.
Yeah, I said to I maybe you remember that it's a long time ago. I said in the past that Trump wanted to build that wall, a very huge wall, and then I said, well, if he makes it a little bit bigger, then the whole United States can be incarcerated.
Yeah, you're going to be either doing time or you're going to be working for the state.
We're
going to put a fence around California.
Yeah, look what happened with California when the fires broke out. They brought prisoners. They brought prisoners out of the prison to help with the fire.
Yeah, but you know what they did with the 13th Amendment? They said that they were going to abolish slavery, and they really didn't, though. they just included the whole United States of America. That's all they did. So we're all slaves, you know. We the people. It doesn't matter, you know. I don't have to go to another country. Every country is here already. I got every flavor you could think of here. I got Indonesia. I got Japan. I got China. I got Israel. I got Africa. I got Zimbabwe. I got it all right here. I don't need to go. Everybody comes here, brings flavor, and we all get to enjoy it, you know? I just wish people could behave themselves a little better with more respectful towards other people's backgrounds, you know what I mean? Because people bring more than just food to the table, which is wonderful, by the way. I love different flavors, different people prepare food. I got to learn a lot about things just through eating food and learning about, like, okra, learning about rice and where these things come from, you know, and who was using these kind of foods to survive, because that's all they had. And then now these foods have become on our menus today as expensive meals. So there is an appreciation for that talent that was way back here that these people used when they cooked. And so I got to learn about history, and I was like, wow, just from two foods, you know, rice and okra, I got to learn all this stuff, and I was like, wow, that's just beautiful.
This country has been so respected by so many other countries, because we have representatives from every single country in the world in the United States. They can call it America. I call it the United States, because representatives from every single country are in the United States.
Yeah.
We should feel honored that we have that title. We should feel honored. And when they go on vacation, they go to the very countries that they hate the people in this country for, yet they want to go to those countries because of the food that you talked about, or the whole place.
The people that come here, they send money to their countries. So their country should be getting better, too, because that's how it works. You know, it's a gift that keeps on giving. So there's no reason why people can't come here and spread that money elsewhere to make wherever they came from, where they broke off from, they're going back to make it a better place, right?
There should be no poverty-stricken country, because look at all the – I mean, I can't stand throwing things away, things that are usable, things that are still in good condition. And we could send it to country –
But I think if you look at other cultures like that, then you are already a oneness. Then you are not divided anymore. And that's what is needed. That's the foundation of all. And because that's the reason, because there is no oneness, that's why the prison system can exist.
Well, the only way it's going to change is if we start right now
Yeah.
Because we can see into the future. People that can't see the future are blind from the future because man gets in the way of their future. And that's a problem. That's a problem. Yeah. So man needs to get out of the way. Now, you're thinking it's easy as, you know, just, you know, saying get out of the way. But it's more than just get out of the way. It's like when people are listening, we need to teach our children that you identify with the universe. Your child needs to be taught to identify with the universe where all the possibilities are. They already exist. If you teach your child that, if you try to have your child identify with a church group that you go to or a religious system or something or this group of people that are doing this thing or that thing, then you're limiting your child to failure. So we need to help people to see that when their kids are little, they identify with the universe, you know, so that all things are possible for them. And you're not trying to put that child in that one thing where it identifies with this one particular group of people. And that's limiting your child experience in life.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at dogmatic religion that has the same principles as a prison system, it's based on vertical power.
Yes.
And for as long as we only pray to God, we don't take responsibility for ourselves. We have to solve our own issues. There is no God who is going to do that for us. We have to do it ourselves. Well, you know, I also feel very connected to the universe. I'm part of it. We all are. And I think that as a human being, I am equipped to solve problems with my fellow human beings and being part of the whole of all that is.
That's true. You have the abilities, the God-given abilities, to empathize with other people.
Exactly.
Those are God-given abilities. Because when you look back at your life, you're not in the dark where you can't see yourself. No. There has to be spiritual light in order to see yourself. And if you can see yourself, then you can see yourself in love. And love took care of all the stuff that you couldn't take care of so that you can love God first because of what he did. And through that love, which is your abilities, you have the ability to empathize with these people where God has called you out from so that you could be a light to these people. Now, if God causes those people to have the light on, then he must be the one that's having the relationship with these people and not you. You're just learning to be obedient to him because the faith that God gave you demands that you listen to him spiritually, meaning it's not like you can go in the Word of God and just read it out loud and think that, oh, well, God says that. Well, you don't even know what God says when you do that because God never forces himself on anyone. So we have to get those things clear too.
God has no human characteristics.
When Chris came on and started talking about the situation, the first thing I thought about was God was using him because he went through, was it 17 years you said?
It was 17 years.
And then you came on and you started talking, especially at the time, to Christy. And the first thing that came to my mind, and I told somebody else this once before when they came out, Lauren Strength, the one that does the show on Sunday, God is using you. You know, sometimes people don't understand why they're in prison. They don't understand why they go through all that they go through. Even with Marion and others, we all have experiences in our life, and we don't know why these things happen, but somehow God is using you to bring you on the show. He's using you, and he's been using Marion as well. And I just thank you. I welcome you, and I hope you'll come on every week with us. Jeez, this is what we need.
I recognize that, Leona, because, you know, when I think about that a researcher that did on the system and the book that I wrote, I did not like to write the book because I don't like the issue. I don't like to research the prison system because it's evil. But I felt that I had to do it, and I cannot explain it rationally in words. But I had to do it. And along my path, sometimes I wanted to quit. I said, I don't want anything to do with it anymore. But then the artist came, and he said, I'm going to help you with art in the book. And later on, there came a translator on my path. I didn't seek for them. And she said, I know about the system. I want to translate your book for you. And that kept me going and going and going. But I cannot explain it rationally. I like it much more, to write about my river where I am every night. I don't like the system, but I felt I had to do it, and I surrendered to that feeling. I cannot explain it.
A lot of people don't realize it either, that we are, something major has been happening right along, especially these past year, the year or two. Something major is happening, and there is going to be some type of closure. I don't know what it is. But one of the things is, people, they don't realize how serious things are. And they just, there's no more morals. And Chris, you mentioned younger people. You know, a lot of these younger people don't have the role models that were out there once upon a time. And that's a sad situation, too, because they're seeking some kind of support. And when they can't get it from an adult, they're going to seek it from somebody that they can relate to who is going through the same thing. And I think that's how a lot of gangs are formed. People trying to find some kind of support, some kind of love, as you mentioned, and they're not able to get it. And so they seek somebody that's going through the same thing. And this is sad because this is where problems begin.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough road. And I think that we're making some progress, because without progress, there's no reports. You know, and we want to make sure that we pay attention to the things that are right and true and of good report. I think this would be a correct way of viewing things. And a lot of times people don't have the ability to see these things clearly because of what they're going through. And some people are going through some spiritual darkness. They can see looking out their two eyeballs in the natural, but they can't see spiritually speaking, which is a problem that they have. And when people have problems, it's like, well, the reason why I see that people have problems is because in their minds, they're looking at a situation that they consider a problem, and they just magnify the problem. And the problem just gets to be so big, it's like a huge mountain. And you want to move mountains? Well, this is how I do it. I talk to somebody, I listen, and pretty soon they're listening to me, and it's me talking to them. And I know what I'm saying. I don't know necessarily what they're going to say until they open their mouth. So this is where it begins. Okay, I have to be in a position where, since I know how the relationship works, because I've been in their shoes where I didn't know the person that I was speaking to until they started opening up and showing and sharing themselves with me. Now, if I felt like I could trust that person, then I'm going to be more inclined to open up a little bit more of myself and share just a little bit more with myself, of myself with that person.
Exactly.
Because I'm learning. I'm learning to... Each time I come in contact with them, I can open up a little bit more, and they can open up a little bit more, and we can have a relationship. Now, in this kind of a relationship, things are changing constantly and rapidly, and it's like you were eating this food, and it was making you feel bogged down. Now you're eating this food, and now you're feeling more excited, you feel more energized, you feel better, and you're like, well, I'm going to stop eating this stuff, and I'm not going to eat that no more. Well, the eating part is what those people are saying to you. Listening to that, you start listening to the right thing, then you start getting fed, and you start getting stronger, and you feel better, and your life is going a different direction now. And I think that if we can bring people together on this platform, which would be the bedrock, this would be where it starts. And instead of being on the sand and sinking in those memories of the past where you can't let go and you live back there and you're sinking in the quicksand, that's not what we want people to do. we want people to not be worried about that stuff, because their future and where they're standing now is not quicksand. It's the platform that we have, so that we can be the wonderful people that each of us are and what we bring to the world, so everybody can benefit from it.
So you know why people can relate to you, because you have that relatable being in yourself, and you explained why. But you're an easy person. Just listening to you would be something that people would feel comfortable opening up to, you know, when you talk about situations. And then you mentioned your own situation, which made it even better. I always say a substance abuse counselor is not going to be a good substance abuse counselor unless they've been there and been through it and overcame. And the same thing with other situations. You have to go through some sort of trials and tribulations to get to a point where you can relate to your clients and your clients can relate to you, or relate to others who can relate to you. We don't have enough of that in politics. For some reason, they don't seem to have gone through the trials and tribulations that many of us have gone through.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad I called in today, because, you know, I pretty much study all the time. I interact with people on different platforms and stuff, but I don't really have a following or anything like that. I don't have people that really follow me, because I'm not that kind of person that you want to follow. But I guess I've been basing that off of the religious community that I've been engaged with for a number of years, and I'm not into religion, and I get mistaken for that all the time.
I have been in almost every religion, from Catholic, being born and raised a Catholic, to Pentecostal or Baptist, to even Jehovah's Witnesses, to everything. And I'll tell you, I have learned one thing. The Bible is the same. It might be revised. People might take it different, practice differently. But one of the things is, it's about love, as you said.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm an eschatology master myself, and, you know, and I'm not here to argue about what the Spirit teaches. As a matter of fact.
What a kind of master? What did you say? What?
What?
What kind of master?
Eschatology master.
What is that?
Eschatology is the end times. It's about the end times.
I believe in it. I'm seriously believing in that.
Now, when you're talking about the end times, of course, we have to remember that when we go into the Word of God, right? When we go into the Word of God, that's God's perfect will for each one of us. That's His love. And what we're doing when we open up the Word is we're sitting at the feet of Jesus, and we can listen to God speak to us through His Word, which He made alive to us. So it's not just the written Word. It's the living Word, because of the illumination of Christ in you. So
thank you.
I had to learn to listen to the Spirit teaching, and it was difficult because of man. Man has all these things that man likes to say about what man thinks that God is saying to me. So I didn't know about this part until the Spirit taught me, obviously, because when I'm studying the Word of God, I'm thinking, wow, I'm getting wonderful. You know, it's wonderful. It's like that's His perfect will, right? But man is right there to try to get you to listen to what he's saying. And man just wants to regurgitate what God says in His Word. He'll quote the Scripture to you without any understanding, just like Job's friends. Job had two friends.
Exactly.
Or actually a couple friends. She had, and those guys were talking about what they heard about God, and Job was talking to God. Because if you get to Job chapter 42, verse 7, what does God say to Job? He says, the Lord's wrath was kindled against Eliphaz the Temanite and his two buddies, because they didn't speak the thing that was right about God like his servant Job did. Because Job had a relationship with God. His friends didn't understand why Job was going through what Job was going through, but God understood that he was dealing with Job, because Job had pride about his beautiful daughters. And Job would do all this extra stuff because he was worried that if they were to curse God, they would be stoned. So God, he was tripping, and God was dealing with him about it. But his friends were some counselors, but some counselors they showed up to be, did they not? Blah, 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 man talking. But so we need to go back to what we were talking about. We can't listen to what man
says. Yeah, they call in know-it-alls. That's the thing. We have too many know-it-alls in this country, and they don't realize that God has a purpose for everybody. It's not them who make the decisions, just like you mentioned. Those two, it was the youngest one, though, the third one, that had made more sense than the other two. But that's true.
Elihu.
Yeah.
Elihu was the youngest, but God never even mentioned Elihu. Well, he did a little bit, because Elihu waited till all the other people, which were the older people, elders, and younger people don't open their mouth. But he got so filled with wrath, he had his little wrath going on there. It was kindled, and he had to throw his 2 cents in there. But even God shows you in there how he dealt with Elihu about his little 2 cents he threw in. So everybody gets to learn something.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I hope you'll come on with us again. And also on Sunday afternoon at 3:30 p.m., Lawrence Drank does the show. And if you can call in there, because I think you would be able to share a lot with them as well. But right now, it would be the same telephone number. And it's the Lawrence Drank show.
I'm kind of limited on how I could do this. I usually tell people to give me a call. You know, I'm usually the one that people will call me, because I always put it that way. But I'll see if I can remember.
What I'd like to do is, if you have an email, if you can send it to me, I'll send you an invite right from the studio when I send it to Mariam and also with Lawrence. But my email address is NBOPRES as a New Vision Organization, NBOPRES@Verizon.net. And you can find me on the internet anyway, nvopres@verizon.net. And if you can send me your email, I'll send an invite to you, and then you can just click on the link and come into the show that way.
You could shoot me one on this phone right here, on this number right here. You can shoot me on this number here is where people get a hold of me through this number.
Okay.
Only people that are serious, though. I don't like people that, you know, they don't understand what they're getting into, because sometimes they'll invite me and then they don't understand what I know. And I don't want to end up forcing what I know on somebody else, because that would be me doing it and God wouldn't be in it. And I don't want to be in those shoes again and again. It really is embarrassing for me.
Well, I'll tell you myself, I enjoyed listening to you, and I'd love to have you come back on with us, because you have a lot of insight into a lot of things that have been going on, and sharing a lot of things as well. But
I'm just glad I could at least, you know, give some kind of a, you know, feedback, and plus reflecting what you guys are projecting as well. You know, there's a light that shines from each entity, and that light will hit another person's heart, and it'll have a reflection back to that person who's projecting. And God's that way with us. He made us like mirrors so that we reflect what he's projecting. So if you're in that light, you're in the love like we are, then everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. I just wish that everyone in this country, politicians, our lawmakers, and all of them could also understand that. But we have 90 seconds left, so first, Mariam, can you please once again information and
you mean my information? Yeah, the sound was a little bit bad. My email, I have a website. It's www.deeperjustice.com. There you can find essays and information about my counseling therapy and who I am. I am on LinkedIn. I am on, for the book, I am also on Facebook. I have also a Deeper Justice page on Facebook. And I am now also, for the book, is it on Instagram. And my email is mariamjacob67 at gmail.com, and I hope my book will be published somewhere in autumn or the end of the summer.
Great, thank you so much. And Chris, do you want to say anything before closing? I have your telephone number, and I also have your name, and I'm going to send you I'll send you an email, and then you can respond, and I can use your email to send the invite. Oh, he's already gone. Okay. I want to thank everybody for being on with us. Miriam, as usual, it was a pleasure having you on. We look forward to next Wednesday. And I again want everybody to know that Miriam has, her book is ready to be published, and everybody looking for Miriam Jacobs on the internet, and we will be able to give more information. She will be able to update as time goes on. Miriam, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it, and I enjoy you, as always, having you come on.
Thank you too, Leona. You know I enjoy it too, and we have a very important message to give to the awareness of people. So,
exactly.
Thank you too.
Thank you. We are now going to end this episode. Thank you all for listening in, and I hope you'll join us next Wednesday and this Sunday afternoon with Lawrence.